time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of gifts, clothing and bric-brac. You'll find them on Ocean View Road in Oneroa. Last Saturday, I caught up with peace campaigners Skate and opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Bruce Davis Goff. But first, talking about the release of the Select Committee's report on the governance of Auckland, here's Hauraki Gulf Islands Councillor Denise Roach. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Island, on Waiheke Radio. And, yeah, a pretty important day yesterday because the Select Committee on Auckland Governance released its report after all of those hearings. Of course, there were hearings down in Onitangi and many, many islanders turned out for that and made submissions. And here to talk about whether or not we had the impact that we wanted to is possibly the last Hauraki Gulf Islands councillor ever. Denise Roach. How are you, Denise?
Gosh, I've got my place in history.
You have, the very last. And it does appear that you will be the last Hauraki Gulf Islands councillor.
Yeah, I mean, the report doesn't actually stipulate where the wards are. And what they've said in this report is that they'll leave the ward boundaries up to the local government commission. And Waiheke Islanders are familiar with the local government commission because we've just been through that mad thing about, you know, no, we don't want to go to Thames Coromandel. So they're expecting the local government commission to report back in March. So we've got, it'll be the next few months that we really need to get active about what we want, what ward we want to be part of. But look, it's not looking likely that we'll have our own Hauraki Gulf Islands councillor on the super city structure.
So perhaps a loss of representation there, but there's some upsides to the report as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've strengthened the local boards, and in the report it does specifically say Waiheke and Great Barrier have their own boards, and again, we'll be the smallest boards in the entire region. But, you know, I think that's pretty exciting. They're very clear that boards need more powers around decision-making, and also, you know, even to the point where we can set our own targeted rates, apply to have our own bylaws if we want. You know, we could have a special Waiheke bylaw about, I don't know, you know, trucks.
We could maybe decide where the library might go?
Yeah, well, first of all, we've got to stop them doing it. So the current community board is onto that now. So, you know, all in all, it's quite interesting. There's a couple of bits that I was sort of disappointed by. I just think, you know, that I actually gate-crashed the press conference yesterday with Rodney Hyde and John Carter. It was held at the Hyatt, so it was quite interesting to hear John Carter's take on it. He was the chair of the Select Committee, and he was unduly proud, very proud of the report, and said, you know, basically they had listened to everybody except for the people in the north and the people in the south, which is the issues about where the boundaries for the super city go.
So, okay, so let's take a closer look at this thing about the boards, because, I mean, that was something that people on Waiheke were very big on, that we should retain a specific board for the island, and that's come through. And it's a new thing, isn't it? It's not a community board, it's not a council, it's something in between.
Yeah, the local board. I mean, you're still having to work in with the super city structure, so from what I can see in the report, and I haven't read it detail by detail by detail, so maybe snags there that I'm, you know, that I'm unaware of yet, and I'm happy for people to tell me. But what I can see is that the local boards, as they're being called in the report, have a lot more powers and have the right to direct the super council about local issues. There was quite a bit of discussion about actually listing what your delegated powers are for the boards, and that was basically to offset the idea that the council could say, well, these are the delegations. So a lot of people were saying they wanted to have them as of right in the legislation, but that's not what this proposed bill is saying at this stage. What they've done is they've made it as open as they can, and based on principles of subsidiarity. I think I said that right. Yeah.
Yeah, who wouldn't know?
Yeah.
And they haven't outlined specific powers that those boards will have, but they have gone some way to kind of giving an indication of the kinds of things that would be covered off in there. And
services, facilities, funds, targeted rates. I mean, the next part of this process is the third bill, where you actually have to get into a bit more detail about that, and also talk about things like remuneration, because it looks to me like it's going to be a bigger job than what it currently is. And currently board members get $10,200 as their honorarium per year, and a lot of them are working just about full time.
And that's going to be very contentious, isn't it? I mean, salaries for politicians are always contentious in the time of a recession. But, you know, if we really want to make this work, we are going to have to recognise that there is a big job there for people to do.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look across the region, there will be fewer politicians than there are currently. I mean, with 20 ward councillors, you're looking at, 110 of them being redundant so far, just from that process. So, it's a representation is actually coming down to the politicians, where they actually have to represent more people, except for the Hauraki Gulf Islands, where because I believe it's because we organised around the Royal Commission into Local Governance, and also around the Select Committee, that we've managed to keep our local boards. So yeah. We've done well, I think.
I think we have. And interesting to read as well that the committee sees those boards not as being in a hierarchical relationship underneath the super city, but sitting alongside in a more of a partnership.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I'm cynical about that a little bit, just because, that's the theory around community boards as well. So a lot of it would depend on the climate of the politicians that we get in. I mean, if we get more of the same of what we've got in Auckland City as the political majority in the super city, then it'll be a hard road, and it'll be... We'll spend those first 3 years trying to reinterpret the Act to ensure that the boards have got the amount of powers that they're supposed to have. Whatever happens, those elections next year are going to be pivotal. We need to ensure that we elect very strong, strategic, financially smart people who are prepared to spend 3 years pushing for as much as we get, because that's the time where we make the most gains for our communities.
And, I mean, in Auckland City, which is, of course, the one we're most familiar with, we've had people who've pretty much kind of cruised to power as a result of the party politics which reign in the Auckland City election. Are you aware, around the rest of the region, whether a similar thing happens? Are those same party politics and are they aligned? Are they occurring in the other cities?
What I'm aware of about what's happening around the region is that on the North Shore, for example, the kind of the left-right split isn't quite so obvious with party politics, but people sort of maybe representing community coalitions on the left and on the right, they tend to group together, but they are all elected as independents. Great Barrier and Waiheke community boards are the only community boards in Auckland City that are all independents. The rest of Auckland City, there's the split between City Vision on the left and Citizens and Ratepayers on the right. And there's a similar sort of bipartisan kind of thing happening around the rest of the city as well, particularly South Auckland. West Auckland, it's not so clear, but, I mean, what's happening now is that both the left and the right are organising to start now to determine who the candidates are, so that they've got the best chance of getting their people elected. So yeah, we're entering the two-party system across the region, and I think that makes me incredibly disappointed about the voting system. I supported changing the voting system, because otherwise it's just going to be dominated by something that looks like Labor and something that looks like National.
Yeah, it's interesting that the report does go into explaining that, yes, most people seem to favour, most of the submitters favoured an STV system, but they stuck with first past the post, and the explanation they give seems to be, well, it's easier to understand.
I think that's a bit unfair. I mean, I can see the hesitancy because there's such a low turnout, generally for local body elections, so they don't want to make it any harder. But I think, you know, with, I mean, I've always thought that you can increase the voter turnout just by organising. And, yeah, I think the government sort of suspects that the people of Auckland are a bit thick. That certainly that's what was coming through from the Select Committee in the report, that STV is too complicated. But we use it anyway. We already use it for the health board elections. And, you know, yeah, it is a bit complicated, but then you've got 25 candidates and you don't know any of them in our case.
And there's some other strong messages coming through in the report as well, some of which I was quite surprised about. A strong message about not selling off assets, and also a strong message about retaining free access to public services like, you know, libraries and swimming pools in South Auckland was the other one mentioned.
Yeah. That's great stuff, actually, and it's good to see it mentioned in the report. The other thing that it does is it picks up a little bit on what the Royal Commission had said about a specific committee to deal with social issues. But from my point of view, it doesn't go far enough, because what it says is that committee's made up of the Mayor, the Minister for Social Development, the chairs of the committees. And, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure that those are the small group of people that I want determining the future of social policy in the Auckland region.
Mm. It's going to be interesting, that jockeying for position over how those things get divided up. And we've got the mayor as well, is able to appoint almost like an American-style cabinet with private advisors as a budget, quite a significant budget to be able to appoint those people in.
Yeah. I mean, that looks kind of weird too. John Carter's, it was John Carter, it might have been Rodney Hyde's, comments yesterday around that was that they wanted the mayors to be able to have independent advice rather than have the CEOs running the show. I'm not sure. I sort of need to think that one through.
Yeah, I mean, because where's the accountability around that advice, I suppose? But mind you, our experience is where's the accountability about the public servants as well?
Yeah, that's sort of, it's quite interesting, isn't it?
Okay, so some interesting changes there, and I think the other interesting thing to watch, of course, is going to be where all of the current politicians try to fit within the new framework, because, as you say, we've got a significant number of councillors being reduced down to 20, people whose wards, like your own, basically going to disappear. Are we going to see those people trying to kind of move back into the local board structures, which will kind of push out people there? Will they just disappear completely? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it's quite fascinating, really. But we've got another period of submissions coming up with the third bill, which goes into a bit more detail about this, and also with the local government commission setting the ward boundaries. So, you know, we. I just think it's really fascinating. At the same time, you know, there's moves afoot on Waiheke for this UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, which I think is probably a great way to go. And what I'm thinking around that is that we need to be able to prove that we have the skills and the people on this island to be able to, who've got, you know, people who've got the skills to be able to, give leadership to the community here. And that has to be the local board in the next 3 years.
And it'll be interesting to see what size that board is. Now, the boards are going to be between no less than 4, no more than 9. And being one of the smaller communities served by a board, I'd imagine we'd end up probably about the same size as we've got now, about 5?
Yeah, I would say so. If you go down below 5, the workload gets too hard, actually. It's good to keep it at what we've got, and that's what we should be submitting on as well.
Yeah. Okay, now I just want to ask you about another couple of things before we move on.
Sure.
We've got a bit of a fiasco, really, I mean, around these wheelie bins. So the letters came out very clearly stating, if you don't want wheelie bins, you can either send a letter back saying that you don't want them, you can send a letter back saying you do want them, or you can do nothing, and that will be regarded as you know, basically a vote for the status quo.
Absolutely.
So people, you know, did what they were told and either ripped the things up, didn't send them back, and now That answer's not right. Let's have another go.
Yeah, no. It's that we'll consult you until we get the right answer kind of approach, which just drives me to despair, actually. I think it's also the lack of communication from the Auckland City staff about this to anybody else as well. Like, I found out about this through the local media. Nobody on the community board knew about it. We were aware of a time frame. We were waiting for the response and, you know, for the Gulf News just to get the media, get the response from the staff was like pulling teeth.
And do you think this has come from staff, or has this come from that committee, that evil committee?
No, this is operations more than governance, so yes, this is coming from staff.
This is mad. And now you've been digging around trying to find out exactly how many letters they did get back?
Yeah, it was something like 3,019.
Which is a huge number.
That's more than half.
Yeah.
You know, because I asked for the answers, so they'd sent out something like I don't have the figures exactly on me, but it was over 5,000. They had 74 returned with wrong addresses, and they also had, and they got in total 3,019 letters, and they said that of the responses that they've got, 20% of everything that they sent out asked for at least one bin. So I said, okay, that's good that you've given me the percentage. Could you please send me the numbers? Because we know that they've added things up wrong in the past. So that did come out. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, and I haven't had a chance to check whether they're doing their percentages right.
So under those numbers then, they have got enough to introduce wheelie bins?
Absolutely. They've got. That's what they're saying. You know, because my point of view is 20% of all the people on Waiheke want a wheelie bin.
So what they've decided is that actually that's not economic, so they're trying to drum up some more support to get more wheelie bins to make it economic for TPI to do it.
I can quote the letter from the staff, which actually said, we want to give people the opportunity to respond. They may have forgotten.
Yeah, right. Guess what, Auckland City? We didn't forget.
Yeah, I suggested that deafening silence was a no. But anyway, we'll see where we go with that. I mean, I get appalled at this sort of heavy-handed approach to democracy. I mean, this is our right to say no. And it's like, oh no, we'll try this again.
And I think what would be interesting, and I imagine it's possible to find this out, though it's a bit of work, would be how many of the percentage of people who said that they did want the wheelie bin are non-residents?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you think about it, it's about, you know, there's around about half of our island are owned by people who don't necessarily live here.
Mm. And I would imagine that a wheelie bin appeals to them much more. You know, for one, they've got one on in the city. They can leave it down there, you know, at the end of their weekend, full of their wine bottles that ring over in their four-wheel drive. That would be interesting to find out.
Yeah, it's what it's doing is that it's actually really showing the divisions between the different types of groups within our community. So I worry about that, really.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Denise.
Okay, now it's beach clean-up week.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Okay, I'm off to go down to Blackpool to join the Junk Defunct team to tidy up. And I went to the launch yesterday with Nikki Kay and Dr. Nick Smith, the Minister for the Environment. So I was very interested. Nick Smith mentioned quite a lot about waste, and all the people there, all the Waiheke people there, didn't barrack him, so I was very proud of us for managed to, you know, keep our hospitality in check and not get into big sort of things about what happened to our waste here, which was, you know, very well mannered of us, I thought.
Very good. Okay, so Hauraki Gulf Islands Councillor Denise Roach, and giving us the rundown on the report there from the Select Committee and what's happening with those wheelie bin letters. So what do you think people should do? Now we've got our second letter. Do we send them back and say, nah, get it, we're saying no?
I haven't received one, which is interesting because I didn't send the last one. So I don't know what they say. And they haven't sent me a copy of it. So if it says, the same as the first one, you can do send it in and say yes, send it in and say no, or not send it in and get the status quo, I just do what you did last time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a bit worried about people sending in another letter and they've already sent in a first letter because maybe that's going to skew the...
Thanks very much, Denise. The first Saturday of every month is the time here on Island Life when we're joined by the opinionated islanders, and boy oh boy have we got plenty to be opinionated about this month. And of course we've got with us Alan Knight. Good morning, Alan. Good.
Hello, hello, yes.
Yes,
we yes brilliant.
We have Alan Knight, very good.
That point, be opinionated if you haven't got a microphone.
No, and we've got Bruce Davis Goff. Welcome along.
Thank you very much.
All right, so, of course, we were just talking with Denise Roach before about the Select Committee releasing their report on Auckland governance and, well, some you know, some good and bad in there on what's going to be the future for governance on Waiheke. And what did you think?
There certainly seems to... There's a lot of questions that you know, we were listening to and listening to that before and thinking, okay, well, the new sort of community board that we're going to have, how many people does it have on it? We've got some idea of the sort of the powers that it will wield, but the form it will take, I think, is still needs clarifying from my point of view. How many people stand? How many can be voted on?
And I think one of the big issues, of course, that we're going to have to consider is how much are they going to get paid? You know, the job's going to be considerably different from what it is now.
Well, I mean, they're already working on a full-time basis. It would seem fair that they get some kind of full-time remuneration for what they do.
Not a popular subject, though, Bruce. Politicians' pay. Not something that most people are going, oh, yes, let's give them a good, lovely, fat wad of cash.
Well, I think in relation to our community councils, I'd say let's give them a big, fat wad of cash. Certainly, you know, they're very active in what they do, and it takes up a lot of time. So they should be rewarded. I mean, there's the argument that the less pay you actually put in there, the less time they're actually going to have to devote to those activities. So, you know, I'd say fair remuneration all round.
And it'll be interesting to see the jockeying for position. You know, obviously we're not going to have this ward representation that that we've had in the past from the...
Yeah,
from
that,
the
that does seem very unsettling, that there's no specific representation on the Super City Council for places like us and for Barrier. So, yeah, as you say, there's some good, some bad. What form it will take, this is what I think will be really interesting, and I'm certainly looking forward to the elections next year.
And that election will be a first-past-the-post election. The Select Committee has deemed that we're too stupid to figure out a single transferable vote.
Yes. That's... I think in this case, you know, I'm okay with the first-past-the-post system on this. Might as well, while we get it sorted out. You can always make it more complicated later on. But, yeah, they do treat us like idiots. But then again, you know, in local body elections, you get so such a small turnout that maybe they just think, well, we're just not interested enough in this.
And maybe this will make a difference. You know, the local board elections, people have kind of thought that the city council would, it's not making much difference. Why they think that, I have no idea. But, you know, but people do tend to think that. And but we've also always had a pretty good turnout here on Waiheke.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that became apparent with the whole select committee thing, was that Waiheke's involvement in giving submissions was far greater than anywhere else's. So, damn right, we should get special treatment. We've shown we're interested.
We certainly have. A good turnout, wasn't it, Bruce? You know, Waiheke's really got out there and...
Oh, fabulous. Really, really good effort. We should all be patted on the back firmly for that particular one. But the thing that really interests me is what shape the wards are going to take and how they're going to actually determine the shape of them. Waiheke and Great Barrier, we're a special case. And, you know, as is often, we tend to get bundled in with Auckland Central, which is a little odd because the contrast couldn't be more marked.
And there has been talk in the past, and I think under the Royal Commission, of perhaps the, in terms of the ward, that the islands might be might go with something like Rodney.
Yes, I don't really see the point to that.
Well, I didn't really see the point with Coromandel either.
No.
Yeah, and that one was dealt a firm blow, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now that of course raises an interesting point for our. Our rogue community board member who's been pushing this through for the last 2 years or so, now that this has been firmly squashed, Would Noble Angelo now consider putting that excellent energy that he's put into his Thames Coromandel proposal into something that the rest of us are actually keen on? You've got a year left. What are you going to do with it? Because I think now that we know that we're safe from that daft proposal, we can sort of say, well, good on him for actually trying. Yes, it was wrong-headed, and it was good that it got turned down, but you can't fault the energy and commitment that he put into campaigning for it. So, with a year left, let's see him put that energy into something useful.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to see, you know, where he does want to head with this next. I mean, it seems that he's still, you know, very, very concerned about the, you know, the concept of democracy and how that's administered in the city. So we might see some interesting things. And of course, everyone now, because there's more power in these local boards, we might see some of the community board members jumping up and down a little bit more than we have before.
What I'm very interested to see is how the current two-party politics that plays out nationally is going to be reflected in the Super Council. I mean, at the moment, I can't say I'm a huge fan of citizens and ratepayers. I don't really know anybody who is, but I'm quite surprised that they have that position of power. How's that going to work in the new city, Super City Council? How will that be reflected on the ward level? So it should be interesting to see what goes on there.
Of course, the problem is, no matter how we rearrange where the politicians all sit, the fact is that once the elections are over next year and the whole political structure has been sorted out, the real enemy is still going to be there. These same bureaucrats who work for the council, we don't get to elect them, we have no say in it, and as we've seen this week over the wheelie bin issue, these people refuse to be accountable for anything. You try and get an answer out of them, and they just stonewall you. And there seems to be nothing that we can do to force an answer out of them.
And there is a specific provision in the Select Committee's report for a new level of bureaucracy, which are these private advisors to the mayor. So the mayor will be able to set up basically like a little self-appointed cabinet, which with quite a significant budget, around $2 million. And that's something we haven't seen before, and that I don't know where that's going to go.
Well, I think that's one of those things that could go either way. There'll be things that you'll agree with, and a new mayor might well bring in some people that you think, yes, these are the kind of people we want guiding policy. But as I say, it's all going to come back to the fact that those bureaucrats are just going to be sitting there stalling the whole thing as ever. Nothing's going to change in that respect.
A few bureaucrat redundancies to happen before that comes along, though.
Bring them on, I say.
can we choose them?
Well, wouldn't it be nice? Yes, if some of the people who head up the committees at Auckland City found themselves having to actually campaign for election in the same way that, say, health board people do. Yes, we probably don't know any of these people, but it would be very nice to see them actually out in the open asking for our support for what they do, because right now they're just there. Nothing we do at the ballot box is going to change that.
So all in all, from the scant information you have on it so far, what would you give the Select Committee's report out of 10?
Oh, I'd probably give it a 7.5. I think they've actually done really well. They've taken a lot of things into consideration. I bumped into Nikki Kaye in town the other day, and she was quite enthusiastic about it. And I think that's been borne out in the report. So I'm quite happy. But there's also a lot of things that concern me. I noticed that the local boards will have powers over certain things, but as I was reading through, I didn't see the word rubbish mentioned anywhere. So,
yes. I think asking what we think out of 10, the trouble is it's one we're being asked on something that we were really not that keen on in the first place. It's like being asked, well, you know, you were mugged on the way home last night quite violently. You were beaten, your wallet was taken and so forth. But how did you think the muggers did? So, well, you know, overall, I think they did a very professional job. They definitely stole everything I had, and I've got a number of cuts and bruises. But they were really very well applied. So yes, under those circumstances, I'd agree 7 out of 10.
It does raise a burning question: is mugging a sensible part of good street crime?
Yes, the old mangle the question machine. I think it's compulsory for a referendum that you kind of put it in and you cut it up, turn it upside down, twist it around, and what do they call those things? A Mobius strip. Put it into one of those and then ask the question.
Yes. Well, I mean, we really have seen this week with the Wheelie Bin issue, this business about, oh, well, we didn't get the response we wanted to the letters, so we're going to waste a whole lot of money sending out a whole lot more letters, and if you ignore those, then you'll get what you wanted in the first place. Your rates dollars in action.
Yeah. So what did you do with your first letter, Bruce?
I do believe we ignored it. I think we sat it on the counter for a while and stared at it in disbelief, and I think we'll put the other one up there and we'll spend evenings staring at them and scratching our heads.
Mm. And your first one?
Well, I think you recall what happened with mine. I tore it up right
there. Oh, that's right. You did it on air. That's right.
A month or so ago, I believe, I read out some of the more vexatious parts of it and then ripped it up, put it all in the envelope, and once we were done in here, I went over to the postbox and posted it back in.
Well, that's probably why they sent you one, because they probably thought, well, you know, this person, obviously, his dog got to it, so we better give him another
chance. That's right. Or the postman was in a bad mood and decided to open it up and tear it up before returning it to Auckland City. Yeah.
Yes. We ignore the last one as well. And this time, we have sent it back. We're sending it back saying, we let you know. We let you know because we took the option of not doing it like you asked us to.
Yes. But it's horrific to watch council functioning in that way.
It is. I mean, and we've seen it on a grand scale with the library and with the service centre, but this just seems, I don't know, I mean, it's just so much more in your face, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here it is, bald-faced, we didn't like what you said, we'll have another go.
Yeah, and as Denise was pointing out earlier on, when pressed to give us an answer on what the real numbers were on the returned forms, they're just, well, I'm not going to comment on that. Well, from my point of view, what do you mean you're not going to comment? You're paid to do the job. Are you telling us you don't know? And if not, why not? How long are we going to put up with this?
Well, I think we're going to put up with it until about September 2010, actually, and then it'll all be over.
Mm.
And then who knows what will happen.
It seems to me that, you know, what they really want to avoid saying is that, well, the wheelie bins have already been bought, and we've spent the bribe money already. Because there's a huge whiff of corruption around this whole thing. Somebody's had a payoff somewhere, and they've gone and bought a yacht with it, and now they can't sell the yacht again to give the money back. That's how it appears. That's a horrible accusation to make, but, well, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, everything about this just sounds sleazy.
Yeah, there is certainly elements to it which kind of make you wonder, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't want to be thought of as corrupt and running the city much the same way that Sydney is run, then don't make it look that way.
Now, there's one more thing I want to ask you about, getting back to just kind of Waiheke issues. We have a, depending on your perspective, a wonderful or a ghastly new addition to the streetscape. On the causeway. You know, the dolphins.
The dolphins.
Opposite the ram, which in itself, of course, was the cause of much mirth for some people and pride for others.
Yes.
So, what's your take on it, gentlemen? The dolphin sculpture. My daughter, who's two, absolutely loves it. We have had to stop the car so she can get out and go and touch the dolphins. She's very, very impressed. The only thing that could make them better would be some purple glitter.
Yes. Yeah, that sort of horrible kitsch, glittery finish to them would be... Yes, it's the sort of thing elderly hippies put on their mantelpieces. But I don't know if you noticed this morning, as you're making your way gingerly across the newly torn-up causeway, somebody's put a traffic cone up on top of it.
I think it's fabulous. I'm a great fan of public sculpture, and I think it's great, you know. The ram, of course, is good. We're very sorry it lost its appendages, but they appear to be cemented firmly back in place now.
Yeah, what I like about it is that, you know, we have a number of, you know, of sculptures around the island, and they're all very worthy and arty, and, you know, and people go to great lengths to choose something, and, you know, some of them are disastrous. You know, there's the tin and Matia Tia. And, you know, but that's a great example of all this kind of artiness and worthiness. And then you've got this other bunch of people who say, well, that's not our Waiheke. you know, we're not art gallery types. We're drinking Lion Red and a prefab types, and this is what we like. And there you go, Waiheke.
Well, we're a very interesting place, as someone said to me. We appear to be one third rich people, one third commuting yuppies, and one third deliverance.
I for one love the ram sculpture. I think sheep are definitely underrepresented in public art. And the ram there with his appendage. And I'd love to know whose mantelpiece the original appendage is on. But you know who you are. You're out there somewhere. But he's got a nice new pair now. Yeah, I can't fault the ram sculpture, really. He's quite nice. But I think the dolphins are unnecessarily kitsch.
Yeah, well, there has been a thought, of course, in many towns across New Zealand that the way to attract tourists and get people there is to build a big thing. You know, you have a big kiwi fruit, a big carrot.
Yes.
You know, and if we were going to continue down this route, we've got the ram, we've got the dolphins, what big thing would we have to symbolise and attract tourists to us? Perhaps we could stick it in the middle of the car park at Matiatia.
Yes, something obviously hand-rolled.
Well, I mean,
that might be quite appropriate.
Yeah, maybe in the old days you might have had a giant beneficiary, and then perhaps you could have had a giant hippie. These days it might be a giant laptop with flashing lights. I'm not sure.
Oh, probably a wine bottle.
A giant wine bottle.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe a giant olive.
The trouble is, a giant olive. How do you really express an olive? It's just a great big green blob.
Well. We could go down, get the big truck, get the kiwi fruit, bring it up, paint it green.
Yes, that's true, yes. Oysters?
A giant oyster.
A giant oyster, that's
chilies, perhaps.
Chilies, yes.
We could have a whole lot of them all around the island.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the start. I mean, you know, what I'm worried about is that people driving across the causeway on the way to O'Connell's Sculpture Park at the far end of the island are going to get waylaid and think, hold on, we're there.
Absolutely. They'll spot the ram's appendages and swerve wildly off the road. It could be a scene of many accidents. I'm concerned about that.
Well, of course, anyone making their way across the causeway now have got far worse things to worry about, like whether their car tyres are going to survive.
Yeah, whether they've got any suspension left.
Now, how many years ago was it that they redid the causeway?
It only seemed, I would say off the top of my head two, but
two
I'm sure
ago?
It's longer.
Yeah, and it seems we keep coming back to this every time. What is going on with the roading?
Yeah, I mean, they do seem to be digging a deeper hole this time, though. I mean, they're scraping away quite a lot before they fill it up with gravel again.
Yes. What worries me, of course, is that a lot of people are now going to avoid the causeway. They're going to go up Hill Road, which will then fall to bits again. So they'll spend next spring redoing Hill Road.
Must be about time to do the Hill Road footpath again. That hasn't been done for a couple of weeks.
Yes, that's right. Yes, you know, where you've got a footpath, why not tear it up, build another
one? Well, we've seen that in Oniroa, of course.
Yes.
Now we've got red footpaths. In case you can't find your way to Oniroa, maybe, who knows?
Yes, they've just gone footpath mad.
Yeah, but many other things underspent, which was interesting to come out this week. Money allocated for rebuilding the seawall around the Esplanade, not spent, deferred. Money spent. There was money for another big project as well, all been deferred. But yet we're getting the footpaths that no one seemed to need.
And once again, if you try and ask why this is happening, no comment from the bureaucrats in charge. That has got to change.
Will the new structure bring more accountability to the average person?
Don't hold your breath.
It'll be interesting. I think there's good and bad in there. I'm looking forward to the chance to my local vote to be more meaningful than it is now. Yeah.
Well, we can but hope.
We can. Okay, and there we will leave it, the Opinionated Islanders, for another month. So we had Bruce with us. Thank you for popping in today, Bruce.
Thanks very much. Yeah,
welcome to the team.
Woohoo!
And Alan Knight, our Opinionated Islanders here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. Waiheke is going to be the inaugural step on the Global Peace March, and we've talked a little bit about that. Hold on, just microphone's falling on the floor there. We've talked about that before here on Island Life, and with me this morning is Skate, one of the organisers of the Waiheke branch of that march. How are you, Skate?
Good morning, Chris. Well, really good. Lovely morning.
Now, we've got the Global Peace March in September, and Waiheke's kicking it off, isn't it?
That's right. We even being able to carry the Hiroshima flame, which has been brought back from Japan. And Waiheke is the first one to give it up, pick it up and carry it across to support the World Walkers. There's more than 200 delegates and Nobel Prize laureates coming over to Auckland. And then they'll go down to Wellington for the 2nd of October, Gandhi's birthday. But Waiheke's kicking it off, the World Walk. Waiheke does it again. Waiheke's good for political action, I think.
Now, the Hiroshima flame, it sounds like it's probably something quite symbolic and important, but I know very little about it. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
The Hiroshima flame was lit in determination and declaration of never, ever having a disaster. So catastrophic ever happened to the world again, and in the memory of all those people that died. And the flame has been burning since the end of the war, since the Hiroshima incident. And as I said, the flame is being brought across because this is the first world ever walk for peace. It's the first world movement that we've had that says we want peace. So this is pretty significant, and I anticipate there'll be a lot more walks annually or biannually. So we're very excited on Waiheke, and we'd love everybody to get up and get out and come and celebrate and dance. And there's heaps of energy already, drummers, singers. Anu Grace is starting off with flutes and all the children and petals, and all the children are getting excited, and Kitten Maney. And we're hoping Susie Newborn and Claudia Pondelli, some really, really significant people, would be at the front. Some of the Rainbow Warrior and Free People and the chefs that still carry around the world making statements.
And I know that you're particularly proud of a banner that you got made.
Oh, yes, we got the banner. We've chosen the banner, and thank you everybody, absolutely everybody who submitted drawings. They're all really very impressive. And it was such a hard decision, Chris, which one, and to choose. We chose it. Perkiko Prints has actually printed it for us. We're having a tent, a vigil tent on Belgium Road, thanks to Tony Pope. And Greenacres' Sylvia Hubbard is offering one of those portaloos for the staff or for the people who are going to be the vigil. So it'll be a 24-hour vigil. We pick it up on the 17th and bring it to Waiheke. It's presented by Bob Harvey to Kitten Maney, I believe. And so we'll bring it home, and the tent will be already established. So we're going to have a roster of people sleeping, staying there for a vigil, and we'll do banner painting ready for the 20th walk. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're even rattling tickets, like, you know, someone's offered a massage, and Alan Dive has offered a dive, and I think we're offering some night and to stay overnight in the tent as a big novelty. So there's lots of things happening for this.
Yeah, and this is, of course, an important week because it's the 70th anniversary of the Declaration of World War Two.
Yes. It's all happening. You know, it's lovely when we look on now. When you think we look on the news and see the disasters and the dramas and the pain and the suffering, and now we're sort of turning it around. Lots of things all around the world, you know, are being turned around. It is a very exciting time to be alive, actually. Yeah. So that's another celebration. 70 years, 2 days ago, I believe.
Okay, and obviously you're still trying to get people hooked into this, so they should do what to get involved?
Turn up with a smile, a laughter, a banner, just sing and dance. I mean, it is a Waiheke event, and the purpose of our Waiheke event is to really support all those people that are going around the world and being ambassadors for peace. I mean, I think there's so many of us here alone that would love to be going. So we're very, really supporting the motive and supporting the people. And I think it's going to be a lovely day. It actually finishes at Allison Park. But I think the singers and a few other people are going to be in Morrow Hall as a weather standby. I think it's going to be fantastic. So come along, Waiheke. It's going to be a nice day for a little stroll from the Peace Rock at 11 a.m. it starts, but people are gathering at 10 a.m. and getting a coffee down there, I think. And That'll take about an hour and a half, right around the Surfdale waterfront. The council's supporting us. It's closing off the road so that we can go around the waterfront up to Allison Park, into Morrow Hall, and have a shebang, really. Dance, kick up our heels, and really support the world peace.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Skate.
Thank you, Chris. In. Have a lovely weekend.
Now, on a similar theme, we also today in, I think it's at 7 o'clock, I'll check that time for you, in Whittaker's Music Museum, Green MP Kennedy Graham is speaking. He's just had a private member's bill pulled from the bag, and that bill proposes that it will become illegal for the New Zealand government to send troops to any overseas military action that didn't have UN sanction. So that's going to come up for debate in Parliament, and Kennedy will be outlining the background of and rationale behind that. So if you're interested in the peace march, you may be interested in that as well. That's Whittaker's Music Museum this evening, and I'll confirm that time for you later on in the show. Thanks very much, Skate.
Thanks, Chris.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.